Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
At the end of April, I attended a seminar given by Dr. Dennis Chu of the Ohio State University College of Veterinary Medicine on urinary problems in dogs and cats, but primarily cats. I was very interested in this because I've always considered urinary problems in cats as kind of like the poster child for demonstrating the interaction of physiology, behavior, and the bond. As a veterinary student, just at the tail end of the period where we still wanted to believe that there was a virus or a bacteria that caused everything. And once we identified it, then we would find the drug and we would treat it. That was the goal. But as time went on, it turned out that wasn't the case. Dr. Chu is one of the people who started doing cultures on these cats with urinary tract problems. And he discovered that even though they were responding to antibiotics, primarily amoxicillin, there was no bacteria in the urine. And then other researchers looked for viruses, and there weren't any viruses in most of them either. But one of the things that's interesting about these problems in cats is that if they're given antibiotics, they do get better. Of course, some of them do get better if they're not on antibiotics. But the fact that they do get better on the antibiotics, this raises a lot of questions. One being, well, they were going to get better anyhow. Another one being, well, is it something else rather than the antibiotic itself that is resolving the problem? And is this a component of the antibiotic itself? Perhaps something that's been added to the antibiotic to make it easier to dispense, to make it more palatable? Or is it just the simple act of medicating the cat, the interaction between the owner and the cat? That's up for grabs right now. And maybe it's a little of all of the above. But the fact is that even when these animals appear asymptomatic, that is, they're not showing any signs of any discomfort, they still do have physiological changes in their bladders. So over time, and even though it was blasphemous 35, 40 years ago, the idea of environmental enrichment came up in cats. It's rather interesting when you think about it that environmental enrichment has been a topic of concern for lab and zoo people for a lot longer than it's been for companion animal people. And especially for cat owners. One of the reasons why this was even considered came from the public and from personal experience, some anecdotes rather than any studies. People who had cats with chronic or recurrent urinary tract problems that didn't respond to treatment and who really loved their pets and didn't want to euthanize them would let their cats go outside. They knew what the cat was experiencing, and what they were experiencing inside was not a quality life. The cat was obviously in pain, and the owner had a really rough time living in a house that constantly smelled like cat urine. And even the most loving owner gets worn down by this. And so they would let these cats out for a few hours every day, and golly jeepers, the cats got better. So then the question became, what was the cat getting outside that the cat wasn't getting inside? And like so many things in behavior, it turned out that there were opposite probabilities relative to environmental enrichment. One was that the cat's indoor environment was so sterile that just being outside in the real world gave the cat something to fill this void in the cat's life. Speaking of which, pardon me while I open the door and let my cat in. Hey, guys. But the opposite was that the owner's life was so chaotic. You know, maybe with kids or television, radio on all the time, the owner keeping weird hours, making lots of noise or whatever, and the cat never got any rest. over time, anecdotal evidence from veterinarians and cat owners themselves made it clear that how we relate to cats, like any other animal, can affect that animal's health and behavior too. So it was good to hear this. It was good to hear how the profession has moved beyond the problem-oriented approach. Are all the answers there? Oh my goodness, no. Like anything else, the more we know, the less we know. Feline diet is a complete black hole in some ways. We know more than we did in the past, but it's not nearly enough. I don't think anyone would say flat out that anyone knows what a truly balanced diet is for a cat. There are too many variables involved. And unfortunately, it may be a case that we're going to learn what some of those variables are from the cats who suffer problems for want of that particular element or because the diet we're feeding them has too much of something else. But the nice thing about attending a day of seminars on the subject is I came out of there with new respect for my P's and Q's. For cat pee and all of its wondrous and confusing problems associated with behavior, physiology, and the bond, and all the questions for which we've been able to find answers in the last decades, and respect for all the questions, including some new ones I never even thought about, that still remain.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.